and brother can rediscover.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour starts now.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins, and today we've got a very special guest on the Rediscover Hour, and that is our auxiliary bishop, Andrew Cousins. He's been a bishop here in the Twin Cities for a little over a year. And today on the show, we're going to talk about his role as an auxiliary bishop. And we're also going to talk about some of the difficult times that we've been going through in the last year and some advice that he has for you on how to get through it, how to deal with it, and how to grow in holiness. This is the Rediscover Hour, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Rediscover.
Would you like to help protect unborn babies? Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life will hold its 41st annual March for Life on January 22nd at the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul. The march commemorates the 57 million unborn children who have died from abortion since it was legalized in 1973. 600,000 have been killed in our state alone. Come to the MCCL March for Life. Speak up for the protection of unborn children and their mothers. They need you. Set aside an hour to show your solidarity with our most vulnerable brothers and sisters. The march is at noon on Thursday, January 22nd, at the State Capitol in St. Paul. Signs will be available for you to carry. A short program will follow the march on the Capitol Mall. Come to the Capitol at noon, January 22nd, for 1 hour and march for life. For more information, visit mccl.org. That's mccl.org.
I'd like to introduce Therese McCann, a licensed psychologist in St. Paul. She not only shares your Catholic values, but uses the Catholic faith in therapy sessions.
I'm really excited by the work I'm able to do with faith-filled Catholics. It's very efficient and effective, and we do it in prayer. If you're not able to live life to the fullest, I'm very skilled at getting to the core of what's bothering you. And when we get there, we'll invite the Lord in. It's where He belongs. It's where He wants to be. And when God comes in contact with our woundedness, amazing things happen. Everyone needs help sometimes. So give me a call. Come on in. With the Lord's help, we'll get it done.
I'm Mary Paquette, a pro-life family physician. I feel confident recommending psychologist Therese McCann to my patients, because I can depend on her to uphold Catholic values. I've seen lives changed by her method of using prayer in therapy.
You can reach psychologist Therese McCann at 651-222-5200.
I will never forget you. For your name I have carved on the palm of my hand.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins. Today, as I mentioned earlier, we've got a very special guest, and that is our newest auxiliary bishop, Andrew Cousins. And we want to welcome you to the Rediscover Hour, Bishop.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to be with you.
You know that you've been a bishop now for, what, a little over a year?
Yep, just over a year. I was ordained on December 9th last year, 2012.
For those 13. That are listening to the show that are not familiar with you or don't know you that well, give us a little background in your life and what it was like to become a bishop and your initial visit to Rome.
Yeah. So my life changed pretty dramatically a year ago when I was made a bishop. It's sort of like somebody took away my old life and gave me a new one. Up until that time, I was teaching at the St. Paul Seminary, and so my daily life was around the seminary, working with the seminarians, teaching classes, etc. But once I became an auxiliary bishop, I began to work full-time for the archdiocese, and so that meant, first off, that I got to travel the whole archdiocese, and I've attended masses and given talks and other events around the whole archdiocese, and so I've gotten to see so much of the wonderful work that's happening in our archdiocese, in our parishes, and in our schools, and also begin to serve with the archbishop and the rest of this team here at the chancery and in the central corporation that I work in. So basically, my day-to-day life changed pretty dramatically. I did have a wonderful opportunity a couple times this past year to go to Rome and to meet our Holy Father. It as I've joked with people, I said there are lots of crosses that come with being a bishop, but there are a few blessings, and one of them is if you go to Rome, you get to meet the Pope.
Yeah.
And not everybody who goes to Rome actually gets to shake the Pope's hand, you know. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was nervous about it because I knew I was going in January to direct a retreat for some seminarians. And so I asked my bishop friends, you know, if I want to go to the Wednesday audience, which the Pope has every Wednesday, do I need a reservation or do I need a special identification? And they said, no, just wear your fancy bishop's cassock and show up and they'll let you right in. And sure enough, it works. If you dress up like a bishop, the Swiss guard just salute you and let you walk right by.
I'm going to take note of that.
And then I walked right up to the platform where the Holy Father comes in there in St. Peter's Square for the audience. And it was really a moving moment. I mean, to be there with all these bishops, maybe there were 100 bishops there that day, and to see the Holy Father come into St. Peter's Square and to think, there's the Pope, and I'm a bishop, and I'm up here in front of all these people, and to think of, you know, St. Peter and the other apostles and the martyrs who died in Rome was a very moving moment. And so the Holy Father came and he delivered his Wednesday morning address. And then afterwards, they came to us bishops and invited us right up to the Holy Father. So I got to shake his hand. And I was a little nervous, of course. I spoke to him in Spanish. You're supposed to take your zucchetto off and kiss his ring, but I forgot. I just grabbed his hand and I said, Holy Father, you made me a bishop just a few months ago. And I want to thank you for being a man of the gospel. And he said to me, where are you from? And I said, oh, I'm from Minnesota in the United States. And then he said, my, you're young. He said, you're going to have to work a lot. And I could almost see how tired he looked when he said that. And then he said, and you have to pray a lot too. And then he put his finger right in my chest and he pounded in my chest three times. He said, pray a lot, pray a lot, pray a lot. He said it in Spanish, rezas mucho. So it was really a very moving encounter with me, and I felt very much his own fatherhood and encouragement in my new role as a bishop. So it was really a great gift.
It must have been surreal to stand there in St. Peter's Square. You've been there before.
Sure.
But now you're returning with this role as a bishop. It has to be sobering.
Of course, it was very sobering. And, the reality of what it means to be a successor of the apostles, which is what a bishop is, mm-hmm. That means that he carries on the church and the full authority of the church. The church can't exist without the apostles in our midst who give us the sacraments and who bring the life of Christ and make it present through their shepherding and teaching and sanctifying. And so to experience that was really a profound thing, especially praying at the tombs of the apostles in Rome, of course, who were all martyrs. And that was really my prayer when I got to visit Rome this last year was to that I might be faithful, just as St. Peter and St. Paul and the other apostles were, that I might be faithful to the witness of Jesus, because our world today needs that witness so dramatically, so that I might be a good witness, faithful in every circumstance as they were.
Well, I know, the Holy Father said, pray a lot. You're going to have to pray a lot. And full disclosure, you're my boss. I work with you in the area of evangelization, and I know you are a man of prayer. And I don't think you could be a bishop without being a man of prayer, you have that connection to the Lord. So you come back to the Twin Cities, and life has changed for you, as you mentioned. What is the role of an auxiliary bishop?
Yeah, a bishop is a shepherd, and so an auxiliary bishop is really an assistant shepherd. And so my goal, my role, and Bishop Pache, our other auxiliary's role, is we're the right and left hand of Archbishop Nienstedt, and we assist him in all of the shepherding that he has to do for the whole archdiocese. Archbishop Nienstedt is a very consultative leader, so he really wants our input, and we have a lot of meetings to discuss decisions that need to be made and which way we should go on those decisions. And not just the bishops, but he also uses very extensively his central leadership team to help give direction and guide. And so we do everything that the archbishop does as his assistant. So sometimes that means I'm representing him at a big mass at a parish, or I'm giving a talk, or I'm going out to the parishes quite a bit to do things to represent him. Other times that means I'm sitting in meetings with him to help discern and decide about decisions that we need to make, whether that's from placement of our priests or policies that we need to enact. But also, he's given each of us, who are his vicars general, that would be me and Bishop Pichet, and also our moderator of the Curia, Father Lakowitzer, he's given each of us particular responsibilities to represent him. And so I'm in charge of Catholic education and Latino ministry for all of our Latino and Spanish-speaking Catholics. Also, evangelization and marriage and family life. So I oversee those areas for the Archbishop and help give direction to all those areas. And a big part of my work is simply encouraging and giving direction.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, there's a lot of good people doing a lot of good work in this archdiocese, but we need our leaders to give the direction and to give encouragement in the way that we need to go forward. And so a big part of my work is that in working with other people to help give direction and encouragement.
We're talking with Bishop Andrew Cousins, one of our auxiliary bishops in the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. And when we come back from this break, Bishop, we want to talk about some of the difficult times we've been through in the last year, some of the things that have changed, and talk a little bit about sharing this with others and how do we communicate with children, with family members, people at work who are asking us questions about what is going on. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. We'll be back with Bishop Cousins right after this.
Rediscover.
Over the course of a life of a business, its growth and success are often the direct result of hard work and dedication. Managers and business owners spend a great deal of time positioning a business in the marketplace to ensure they're in the right position, take advantage of opportunities and market conditions.
I'm Larry Longer of LCI Consulting. If internal and external safety of your business technology is keeping you awake at night, you should be in touch with our company. All of your company's hard work and data may be vulnerable to attack, completely derailing your growth and success. Our local technology experts can work directly with you to protect and preserve systems that make your company work.
LCI Consulting in the Twin Cities helps small to large companies keep pace with technology and vulnerabilities that can affect your future. For expert technology management, call 763-425-7567.
Call us at LCI to have our technology experts working for you. 763-425-7567. LCI is proud to sponsor and support Relevant Radio and our Catholic communities in the Twin Cities.
This is a special announcement from Westside Tire in Corcoran. Tires wear out, and winter is a bad time to test the reliability and traction of old tires. Westside is the area's largest tire wholesaler, and they sell direct to you from their location in Corcoran, just west of the metro. They offer an amazing number of tire brands and sizes to fit cars, SUVs, and light trucks. Westside Tire is offering an instant rebate on purchases of 4 tires to fit your vehicle. You can choose from Firestone, Bridgestone, Michelin, and more anytime before January 31st, and receive a $60 instant rebate on 4 tires for your car, light truck, or SUV. Plus, you get the service and best price offered every day at Westside Tire. You can even call or email them for an estimate or an appointment. Relevant Radio listeners know, for tires, brakes, and alignment, you count on Westside Tire. 763-420-2100. Just west of the metro in Corcoran. They'll take care of you.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins, and joining me today is our auxiliary bishop, one of them, and that's Bishop Andrew Cousins. And Bishop, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today about all things Catholic in the Archdiocese. As you know, and you came in at a time where things were very difficult in the Archdiocese, in the news. And of course, we're talking about the sex abuse scandal that was so big in the news over the last year and a half. Can you talk to us a little bit about where we're at with that right now and what the Catholic Church is doing in the Twin Cities about it?
Sure. Obviously, this has been a big part of my first year as a bishop, has been helping the Archbishop and others in the Archdiocese to make sure that we're doing all that we can to deal with the crisis of priest sexual abuse. And we've taken several very important steps in this past year in order to make sure that we're doing all that we can. First off, of course, even before I began, the Archbishop established a task force, which was given permission to look at everything that we were doing to make sure that we were following all of the right processes and had the right processes in place in order to make sure that we could do all we can to prevent this problem from happening in the future. That task force did a very diligent work, and it took them about 4 months to complete their work, and they gave us several concrete recommendations. Several of those recommendations we had already begun to do. One of them was to do a review of all of our files, just to make sure that we knew everything that was in our files so that we could, if there were problems, make sure that we're dealing with those problems. They also helped us to establish key processes. We employ now really two boards of lay experts that help us to make sure that the priests we have in ministry are healthy in every way. And those lay experts have on them psychologists and lawyers and experts in child sexual abuse. And they help us to make sure if there's a question about the behavior of a priest or some other concern, we have these lay boards who are there to make sure that everything gets looked at and that we can assure that the priests we have in ministry are in fact safe and not going to cause any dangers, but they're healthy and holy as they should be, and as in fact we know the vast majority of them are. Though the other change that we implemented this past year is that we brought on a new person to oversee the whole area of what we call ministerial standards and safe environments. And this man, Tim O'Malley, who's a former judge and also a former FBI and police officer, has really the responsibility to make sure that in this area that everything the Archbishop needs to know, he knows, and that we make all of our decisions about priest placements and about personnel with all the data that we need, and that nothing's being dropped, and that everybody has the information they need to make certain informations. And I've experienced Judge O'Malley to be a really a fair man. He really wants what's good, and he's very honest, and he's very thorough and professional. And so he helps us if we have any questions about any kind of borderline activity or misconduct in any case, then he helps us to look at that and to make sure that we are dealing with all those things in the right way. And he works very closely with the two lay boards that I mentioned. In fact, this whole attitude and work of the Archdiocese this last year has been really shaped by some, I would say, kind of key goals. One goal has been certainly to do all that we can to make sure that this never happens again, to make sure that the priests we have in ministry are in fact who they say they are, which is happy and healthy and holy priests. The second goal has been to promote the healing of victims. And we've really worked hard at that. One of the landmarks of this past year was a settlement that we made with Jeff Anderson, which was to put us on the same side, recognizing in the sense that we want to do what's best for victims. And that's our goal, and we recognize that Jeff also shares that goal, and so therefore there are ways in which we can work together. Even if we recognize we won't always be on the same side, we can work together because we both are promoting victims and their healing. And so we've really tried to make every decision in the past year, but especially the past 6 months, with that in mind. You know, a big part of that came because we made a concerted effort to listen to victims in this past year. And it's one of the things that's marked my first year as a bishop has been spending time with victims of clergy sexual abuse and hearing their stories. And I can tell you my own experience from hearing those stories is to recognize that in a certain way, clergy sexual abuse is worse than any other kind of abuse. And the reason it's worse is because it disconnects the person from the source of healing, which is God. And when a person is abused in the name of God, it makes it very difficult for them to trust God after that and to trust the people who could lead them to God. And so you can imagine a person who was abused in a church or by a priest would find it difficult even to go into a church or even to see a priest. And yet those could be places of healing.
Right.
And so in a certain way, it not only wounds them deeply, but it cuts them off from the sources of healing. And that's where really in our humility as a church, we have to be ready to come humbly before victims and say, we want to find ways that we can to help you heal. One example of that is we established a new clergy sexual abuse hotline in this past year, and it's not run by the Archdiocese. It's run by an independent organization. So if you're a victim of sexual abuse, you don't have to call the Archdiocese. You call this independent organization, and they can get you the help. We fund it, but they can get you all the help that you need, and you don't have to talk to a priest until you're ready.
Can people find out more about that just by calling the Archdiocese?
Just call the Archdiocese or go to the Archdiocese website. We've got Safe Catholic MSP is our website that has all of the policies and everything that we've been working on in this past year to show what we're doing to address this problem. And I think, you know, even Jeff Anderson would admit now that really we have best practices in place and that we're doing all that we can, even if we know that we still have lots of lawsuits to deal with, and so those things are up and coming.
Well, Bishop, I want to say thank you to you for the work you're doing, and Archbishop Neinstedt and Bishop Pichet. As bishops, you're lightning rods too, and people are going to criticize you, and I think people have been very, very angry. But I know that working with you closely and knowing Archbishop Neinstedt and Bishop Pichet, the three of you are working very hard.
Yeah.
At this, and very sincere, trying to bring healing to victims and trying to raise the standard for our priests. I think in society as a whole, in every segment of society, there's abuse. But as you said earlier, there's something particularly egregious about a priest or anybody that is working in the work of the Lord abusing somebody else. And I think it catapults it to the front of the line in terms of press.
Yep.
And so forth.
I think it is important too for the people out there in the pew whose friends read about this stuff in the paper but don't go to the Catholic Church.
I was going to ask you about that. What do we say?
Well, I think it's important to help, you know, some, if you read the way the things play out in the press, one might think that every priest was an abuser.
Right.
And it's just not true. And the people who are in their parishes and their pews know how great their priests are. And I think just to give testimony to the fact that, in fact, no, the church is filled with wonderful, holy priests who are living very sacrificial lives for the sake of the people. And yeah, it's true. The church has had her struggles in this area, and we don't want to minimize that, and we want to accept full responsibility for it. But it can't always define us, because the church is so much bigger than this problem. We have to deal with this problem. We have to be responsible, but people need to know that there's a lot more going on in the Catholic Church. I loved the way somebody said it. I saw them interviewed on TV in this last year. They were outside of a church, and someone said, "Well, what?" The press said, "Why do you still go to the Catholic Church after all this struggle?" And the person said, "Well, because the Catholic Church is my family, and families have problems, but it doesn't mean that the family you stop hanging out
but
with your family.
Leave, you don't leave home."
Right. Every family has its struggles, and we have to make sure that we deal with it, and we are dealing with it. But the family also offers us so much. And I think for people to testify to others that their Catholic faith brings them the Eucharist and it brings them confession and it brings them the gospel, it's so important to be able to give witness to that.
You know, so often I watch the evening news, and I'm a father. I have children. And sometimes they're within earshot of the television, and suddenly a story comes up. Mm-hmm. On Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 11, whatever it might be. And my wife and I look at each other, and there's that immediate, do I turn this? Do I turn it down? Should my kids hear this? As a shepherd, what kind of advice, certainly people have asked you, what kind of advice do you give parents when children say, "Mom, Dad, is that true? And what's happening?"
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, each parent, of course, has to deal with that question in their own way. But I do think it's important for parents to be able to share with their children, yeah, the church has struggles. In fact, sometimes priests are sinners. They're men, not angels, you know. But that doesn't mean that, in fact, priests aren't also holy, and that you need to distrust every priest. What it means is we have to continue, all of us, to strive towards holiness. I think I said this on the day that I was ordained a bishop. I said, you know, we can't fix every problem, but one of the things we can do is when we're faced with a lack of holiness by certain members of our church, one of the things we can do is we can choose holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And we can say, I'm going to live a holy life. And we know that the church is the source of our holiness. It's through the church that we receive the sacraments and we receive the life of grace, which is the very source of our holiness. And so we can choose to live a fully Catholic life, and that's the best response to some sinful actions on the part of some of the members of the church.
What would you say, and it might be a difficult question, perhaps people have asked you before, what would you say to someone who right now is saying, you know, I'm not going to give to this church, I'm not going to get in involved, and I'm just going to wait until things change. And they're good Catholics. I mean, they do love the Lord, and they come from a rich Catholic background. What would you say to those who are saying, I'm going to sit on the sidelines now until dot, dot, dot?
I would say that the work of the Catholic Church has to go on. And if it doesn't go on, then society will be much poorer for it. Mm-hmm. If we have to close all of our Catholic schools, the public schools will have to close because we educate too many children for them. Mm-hmm. We're the third largest school district in the state of Minnesota, even though we're not a school district. If we were, that's what we would be. You know, if we shut down Catholic charities, if we shut down all of the works of evangelization that the Catholic Church does, the world will suffer for that. And so we shouldn't punish those beautiful ministries and works of the church for the sake of these people who did some very bad things, some of them priests, right? Mm-hmm. And so we need to continue to be generous with those Catholic works. You know, obviously the Archdiocese does have some lawsuits against it, you know. But the day-to-day workings of your parish, which are affected by your donations, are not part of that. Mm-hmm. Nor are the day-to-day workings of the Archdiocese. Those things have to continue. And so it's very important that Catholics understand we still have a responsibility to support God's work in the world.
And speaking of supporting God's work, there is that time of the year where we hear about the Catholic Services Appeal, mm-hmm. and every parish hears about it. Is this a way for people to give towards work?
It's a wonderful way because the Catholic Services Appeal is a separate foundation from the Archdiocese, and so that money goes directly to those good works, and mm-hmm. that's a guarantee. Mm-hmm. It's not going to go to pay lawyers or lawsuits, and so that's one wonderful way for Catholics to support the work of the church locally is through the Catholic Services Appeal.
Well, I appreciate you being so candid and talking about this painful topic. And I've heard Archbishop Neinstedt and others say, you know, that people will come up and say, well, we need to get beyond this so we can get to the real work of the church. But the real work of the church is healing, isn't it?
It's true. And that's really an important thing for us to remember. As much as I, of course, wish that this crisis were behind us, it's important that we not move on too quickly. Because two things. One, we have to make sure we're doing everything so it doesn't happen again. And two, we have to make sure that we're actually trying to bring healing. Jesus came to heal the world. That's his mission, to make us all whole. And all victims of abuse, whatever kind of abuse, need healing. Mm-hmm. All of us, because of our own sins, need healing. And so this is a central work of the church, which is to be an instrument of mercy and healing. Which is why I'm so excited about the work we're doing in the Archdiocese to try to do that.
We only have about 7 minutes or so left. I'd like to turn the topic just for a moment on growing in holiness. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to kind of peer into your life for a moment and ask you, what's some of your favorite devotions? What's your pattern on a daily basis where you grow in Christ?
Well, of course, I'm a firm believer that every Christian has to have some time every day of personal prayer. And what do I mean by that? I mean some time where I set aside everything else that I do and I focus just on my own interior conversation with Christ. And that can happen beautifully in an adoration chapel. For me, that's what I do every morning. I'm in the chapel for a holy hour. Other people, they can do that in the beauty of their own room or at a break sometime in the day. But some place where I have that daily conversation. And in that daily conversation, lots of things happen. I'm bringing to Jesus the struggles of my day and the hurts of my day and the desires and hopes of my day. And I'm also listening to him. Maybe I'm reading a spiritual book or reading the Bible, and I'm letting him speak to me about how he wants me to live. And so, you know, in the tradition of the church, we call this mental prayer. It's basically a conversation with the Lord, and it's not prayer that's rote. It's conversational. It's me meditating and listening and pouring out my heart and receiving from the Lord's own heart his peace, his mercy, his joy, his conviction, all those things that the Holy Spirit wants to speak to my heart if I'll take the time to learn how to spend that personal time in prayer. So for me, my whole prayer life centers around that. And then, of course, daily Mass. Having that time every day at the altar of the Lord where I offer myself to Him and receive Him and all the grace that comes from that. Those are really the two anchors of my life. Then, of course, I pray the rosary every day because I just know that I need Our Lady's help and I can't get through the day without her. And I find that just a wonderful, comforting prayer. You know, sometimes people say, oh, I get so distracted during the rosary, and I do too. But I love that line from G.K. Chesterton, what he said, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. Because basically, even if I pray the rosary poorly, I have that time where I'm consciously just being with my mother mm-hmm. and letting her care for me and letting her speak to me. And I find that she helps and guides me in various ways throughout the day. And so then I punctuate my day with prayer, you know. The Liturgy of the Hours is another important part of every priest's prayer life, but many lay people pray it as well. And it's a prayer, a scriptural prayer with the Psalms and the Bible, and I can do that in the morning or in the evening, and you can even do that on your iPhone now and at all those opportunities. So punctuating the day with prayer centered on those moments of the Eucharist and that daily conversation is what's so important for me.
We're talking now in January. We've got the whole year ahead of us. Some people have already stepped back on their resolutions. You know what they're going to do for the year. But in terms of becoming holy families in this archdiocese in the year 2015, some words of advice to families? They're facing tough times now.
Yep. First off, again, families need that prayer time together. When a family prays together, we come before our God and our Father, and we present ourselves to Him, whether that's praying the rosary or reading scripture. What a beautiful thing that teaches the children that God is our source mm-hmm. and that everything we have comes from Him and that we need Him. And when children are able to see that their parents pray, and that their parents talk to God and God's a real part of the family, that's such an important thing for families to strengthen them. Of course, the family is the place where children are meant to understand that they're loved and where they're meant to learn about the love of God. And children, as you know, they're wonderful prayers if you give them a chance, you know. Mm-hmm. If you begin to teach them about God, they teach you about prayer because they speak to God so easily when they understand that He's real. And that really helps us to learn about prayer. But I think having some time for family prayer is so key.
I remember growing up in Chanhassen, Bloomington, the times when my parents would take me to confession. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that will be a part of our new year, more frequent confession, going to Mass more often, praying together. Well, I can't thank you enough for spending the time with us. I just have one last question. How can we pray for you this year?
That's a great question. You know, pray that I would be faithful to making Jesus present in everything that I do. It's really my goal is that I would bring Jesus with me everywhere I go and that I would be Jesus' presence in the various circumstances that I work. So please pray that I can get out of the way and Jesus can shine through me.
Well, thank you. Thanks for joining us today on the Rediscover Hour. It's a treat to talk to you and to kind of get an inside look at the bishop's life and what's going on at the chancery. And we will pray for you.
Thank you very
this year.
Much.
We've been listening to Bishop Andrew Cousins, one of our auxiliary bishops here in the Twin Cities. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. We'll be back right after this. Rediscover.
Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus fructus ventris tu, Jesus. Santa Maria.
I'm Father John Paul Erickson, and I'm a proud graduate of St. Agnes School in St. Paul. St. Agnes offers honors-level study for college credit, Latin in grades K through 12, Greek, logic, and philosophy, the study of classical literature, seminar discussions, apologetics, and more. And with more than 25 sports and activities, St. Agnes can provide young people with a truly well-rounded experience in an uncompromising faith environment. There's a fullness and richness of life at our K-12 school that I do hope you'll consider for your own children. And I invite you to attend an open house at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, January 13th, or visit stagnesschool.org to learn more.
This is Caroline Becker for Becker Building and Remodeling. When I was a little girl, the kitchen was always the center of our home. I'm not sure if yours is the same, or if it's just how my dad designs kitchens, but ours was practical, functional, and a welcoming, open space for nurturing relationships and building memories. Our kitchen fit our family. It was where my sisters and I hung out after school, where we sat down to dinner each night as a family, and now that we're all older, we inevitably gather there when we all come home. Our kitchen was for preparing food, sure, but it was also home. It was, and is, where you can always find family. My dad at Becker Building and Remodeling can do your kitchen. Call him at 612-363-0493. Becker Building and Remodeling, 612-363-0493. Becker Building and Remodeling, a Catholic-owned business you can trust.
Healing and reconciliation are important words to our faith. They're especially important to a Catholic marriage. A conference featuring Dr. Bob Shooks, the author of Be Healed, is coming to the Twin Cities Friday evening, January 16th and Saturday, January 17th. In this dynamic conference, you'll be prepared with practical ways to address reconciliation and healing or to resolve conflict and core wounds that may have robbed you of joy, intimacy, and threaten the security we all long for in marriage. Dr. Shooks and his team from the John Paul II Healing Center will be at St. Hubert Catholic Church in Chanhassen helping married couples and interested individuals stay on or return to the path of trust and expressing love within marriage. Registration for Unveiled, the Healing and Reconciliation Marriage Conference, is open now. It's Friday evening, January 16th through Saturday the 17th. Visit jpiihealingcenter.org. That's jpiihealingcenter.org to register or contact Deacon Tim at St. Hubert Catholic Church in Chanhassen. All are welcome to attend.
Say a prayer, say.
And welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. If you just joined us, you just missed a great interview with Bishop Andrew Cousins. You can go online and listen to that. But giving us kind of a state of the church address of what's been going on in the last couple of years and giving us some encouragement to go forward. Well, I know we're still at the beginning of the year, and I want to give you a little bit of encouragement myself and talk to you a little bit about faithfulness from the scriptures as we move into 2015. When you talk about the ingredients of the faith and what is it, you know, what goes into becoming a successful Christian, a successful Catholic, there's a lot of things that you could say. You know, you could say, well, being really joyful is something that's important if we're going to be witnesses in the Twin Cities to other people. You could say we're going to be real optimistic this year, and that's certainly really, really important. We're going to enjoy humor this year, and we're going to use our spare time wisely and all of that. Those are all great things. But you know what really is at the heart of the recipe to becoming a successful Christian and doing some of the things that Bishop was encouraging us to do to grow in holiness ourselves, and that is faithfulness, to live a faithful life, to be faithful in every area of your life, not only faithful to the Lord Jesus Christ, but faithful to your family, to your marriage, faithful as a mother, faithful as a father, faithful in taking care of yourself. No matter what discipline of life you look at, if faithfulness is not there, you're probably going to find an unsuccessful person. But behind every successful person in terms of success in the kingdom of God is faithfulness. But what do we mean by faithfulness? Well, you know, faithfulness first is found in the Bible, clear back in Exodus. And it's found in a story that most people wouldn't say, well, that's the story where we really get our understanding of faith or faithfulness. And it's a story that most of us have heard. It's found in Exodus 17. And I want to read a little bit from that story. It's the story of Moses. He's down at Mount Sinai. He's at Mount Sinai at this point, and there's a battle that is going on. The battle is going on. Let me read it to you. It says, in chapter 17, in verse 8, then came Amalek, and fought with Israel at Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, "Choose for us men and go out, fight with Amalek tomorrow, and I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Now here's what's really interesting, is it says in verse 11 that whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed. And whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands grew weary, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat upon it. And Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. Here it is. So his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua mowed down Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Now, in that story right there, in Exodus 17, 8 through 13, the word faith or faithfulness is used. Now, in Hebrew, it's a different word, and that word is emunah. The word emunah is used in verse 12, and here's what it says. It says, Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side, so his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. That word steady is the Hebrew word emunah, and that's where we get the word faith. That's where we get the word faithfulness. It's that idea of steady, long continuance, faithfulness, fidelity. As long as they held his hands faithfully, they prevailed. And I just want to encourage you as we move into this year of 2015, that steadiness, long continuance, faithfulness is what's going to make you a winner. It's going to make us as an archdiocese a winner. If we will remain faithful to the Lord, if we'll remain faithful in our covenants, that's marriage, our relationship with the Lord, certainly, but we'll also remain faithful to our vocation. Are you a husband? You a wife? You a father, mother? Are you a generous single person? Are you a student? Remain faithful. Now, there's another great story in the Bible that kind of illustrates this idea of faithfulness. And that idea of faithfulness could also be looked at as tenacity. Tenacity. You keep doing it. You might not feel like it. You might feel tired. You know, you might feel like, I've been doing this long enough and I haven't got any results. But the faithful Catholic, the tenacious Catholic, they're the ones that stand out. Now, there's a great story in 2 Samuel chapter 23, and it's the story of David's mighty men. David's mighty men. Maybe you've heard of them. Maybe you haven't. It's kind of buried. It's kind of in an obscure part of 2 Samuel. But as you know, the first three kings of Israel were Saul. He reigned for 40 years. And then you had David from Bethlehem, and he reigned 40 years. And then you had Solomon, and he reigned for 40 years. Now follow this. David was such an amazing warrior. And during David's time, the kingdom grew about 1,000 years before Jesus. It grew to the largest it had ever been. And in looking back at his success, David picked out three men that he wrote about in 2 Samuel chapter 23, where he said, you know what? These three guys, I want you all to know about them, because each one of them exhibited tenacity, faithfulness in the task that was given to them. And I want to tell you about those three real quick. I'm going to read it to you. They've got unusual names: Adino, Eleazar, and Shammah. Those are the three guys. You can find this in 2 Samuel chapter 23, starting in verse 8. Let me go through the three with you and talk a little bit about each one and see if maybe that fits your story, where you're at in your life right now. Starts off in verse 8 and says, "These are the names of the mighty men whom David had. The first is Adino. He was chief of the three. It says he wielded his spear against 800 whom he slew at one time. Now, David thought that it was important enough to mention this guy's name, Adino. He slew 800 of the enemy at one time. At one time. Now, think about that. What does that represent? Well, for our purposes today, we could say that that represents tenacity or faithfulness against overwhelming odds. 800 enemies. Have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt like you're just overwhelmed and, you know, the odds are against you? It's one problem after another, one problem with the kids after another, one financial problem after the other. I've felt like that before. Maybe you feel like that in your marriage. Maybe you feel like that at work. What did Adino feel like? Imagine, he's got his sword. He takes on the first guy. He wins. Another guy. He wins. Another guy. He defeats him. At what point do you say, you know what? This has been a full day. Is it after number 16? Is it after number 69? Is it after 71? Is it after 140? 382? At what point do you get to go over to the couch, sit down, open up something to drink, and watch the evening news? But the problems just keep coming. The opportunities keep coming. Well, I can't imagine what Adino felt like after 800 men. Maybe that was the point where he said, I can't do it again. I can't do it again. But he was tenacious. And I want to encourage you going into this year to be like Adino. Yeah, there might have been 223 obstacles so far, but you're being faithful with each one of them. And that's how you're going to win. I've been there myself before. I've been tired and worn out with overwhelming odds against me. But listen to this. If you will lean on the Lord and you'll realize that with Him, all things are possible. You can go with little. You can go with a lot. You can learn the secret that Paul learned, and that is that with Christ, you can do all things. So I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you as we go into 2015, be like Adino, tenacity in the face of overwhelming odds. 800 he slew. The next one on the list in this very short story in 2 Samuel chapter 23 is a man by the name of Eliezer. Eliezer. Now, Eliezer, that's a famous name within Jewish circles. If you go back to Masada, if you've seen that movie, you'll know that Eliezer was one of the great heroes. But back in the times of the Old Testament in 2 Samuel 23, under David's rule, Eliezer was one of his mighty men, and he too demonstrated tenacity. Here's what it says. And next to Adino, next to him, among the three mighty men, was Eliezer, the son of Dodo. Now, maybe that was his problem right there. Anyway, Eliezer is the son of Dodo, the son of Ahohai. He was with David when they defied the Philistines who were gathered there for a battle, and the men of Israel withdrew. Eliezer rose and struck down the Philistines until his hand was weary, and his hand clung to the sword. And the Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the men returned after him only to strip the slain. Now, this is an amazing story. This Eliezer, he defeated the Philistines who gathered there for battle. He defeated them. He rose and struck down the Philistines, get this, until his hand was weary and his hand clung to the sword. Now, let me give you a word picture that can help you understand what it means to have your hand clung to the sword. How many of you have played that game growing up where somebody comes up and they say, here's my finger, squeeze it really, really hard. Just keep squeezing it, squeeze it. Don't let up, don't let up, don't let up. Keep squeezing, don't let up. Keep squeezing. And then they tell you, slowly release, but don't open your hand completely. Slowly release. Now I can see some of you are doing this on 494 right now. But slowly let your hand go. You'll notice that your hand is almost frozen in that fist position. It's almost impossible to open it slowly because you have put so much energy into clenching your fist. That's what happened to Eliezer. He hung onto that sword so tightly that his hand stuck to that sword. Now, what is this? This is tenacity in the face of overwhelming fatigue. Overwhelming fatigue. Have you been there? Have you not only faced tenacity in the face of overwhelming odds, but overwhelming fatigue? You're just tired. You've been working all day. The kids are staying up late doing homework. You just want to go to bed. You're tired. But you stay up and you help them. You pour out your life for your children, for your spouse once again. That's tenacity in the face of overwhelming fatigue. But you know which one I really like? The third one. Shama. Love the name Shama. You know what Shama means in Hebrew? It means God is there. God is present. Shama, listen to what he did. Next to him was Shama, the son of Agi the Hararite. The Philistines gathered together at Lehi, where there was a plot of ground full of lentils, and the men fled from the Philistines. But he took his stand in the midst of the plot and defended it and slew the Philistines, and the Lord wrought a great victory. What's this? Well, first of all, what is lentils? That's a bean. This guy is defending a bean field. Would you do that? You'd say, no, I got a degree. I got a postgraduate degree. I'm not spending my time doing something like that. What if the Lord gave you the bean field? You know what this is? This is tenacity in a seemingly insignificant assignment. Oh yeah, everyone out there is doing the great things. What did God give you to do? Defend a bean field. But if it's God's bean field, it's worth defending. Do you know who my bean field is? It's my home. It's my family. It's my children. My children are my beanie babies. And that's what God has given me. The rest of the world might not care. But you know what? It's what God has given me. So I want to encourage you today, tenacity, faithfulness for the rest of the year. That's how we're going to fulfill what Bishop Cousins talked to us about earlier in the show, is if we exhibit that incredible faithfulness. Well, Paul, we have had an incredible show today talking with Bishop Cousins.
It's been amazing.
Just to hear him articulate, you know, where he's at, where we've been, and how to go to the next step. And I think tenacity is the key.
Absolutely. Perseverance.
Yeah.
There's another word for it.
Yeah. And I think both of us have been places where we felt overwhelming odds, fatigue.
Over and over again, yes.
And an insignificant assignment.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, let's take a quick look at some of the things coming up around the Twin Cities. Maternity of Mary Church invites you to their annual Celebration of Life dinner, Saturday, January 17th. Come for Mass at 4:30, and that's followed by a delicious Italian dinner and a presentation by Mary Kellett, founder and director of Prenatal Partners for Life. Maternity of Mary is located at 1414 Dale Street North in St. Paul. For more information and for tickets, call Maternity of Mary, 651-489-8825. That's 651-489-8825, or go to maternityofmarychurch.org.
Our Lady of the Prairie Catholic Church will be holding a waffle and sausage breakfast on Sunday, January 18th, from 8:30 to noon. All proceeds benefit the Our Lady of the Prairie 6th grade Wolf Ridge Learning Center trip. All-you-can-eat waffles, lots of toppings, and even gluten-free waffles available upon request. Free will donations accepted. That's Our Lady of the Prairie, and it's at 200 East Church Street in Belle Plaine. If you have questions, call Mary at 952-873-6945.
Northwest Hennepin Knights of Columbus are sponsoring a KC Lumberjack Breakfast Sunday, January 18th. 8:30 to 12:30 at St. Martin's Social Hall in downtown Rogers. Come for a hearty breakfast and support the Mary Queen of Peace Church, school, and community. All invited. Free will offering. Call 763-428-2585 for more information. That's 763-428-2585.
And make plans to attend a special Mass and blessing for the sick, sponsored by Curatio Apostolate of Catholic Healthcare Professionals and the Order of Malta. That's Saturday, February 14th at St. John the Baptist Church in New Brighton. Bishop Lee Pichet will celebrate Mass for the World Day of the Sick at 10 a.m., including a special blessing with water from Lourdes. And for more information, you can call 651-633-8333.
The Women's Conference is coming up February 14th. Tell me a little bit about that.
That's going to be a huge conference at Epiphany. And you can go to our website at thearchsbm.org and find out all about the wine presentation. It's a big wine ministry. It's the women's ministry. Men's conference is coming up on March 21st.
Any details on that yet?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
always a biggie.
Well, I can tell you this. The theme is going to be conquering sin.
Ah, that's a biggie.
It's a biggie. So we've got some big guests coming, and we're going to be announcing those shortly. And we hope that the word gets out. So that's the women's conference, February 14th. And we have the men's conference, March 21st.
And what's coming up next on the Rediscover Hour?
Coming up, Paul, next on the Rediscover Hour, the theme will be healing as we talk with Father Rolf Tollison, the pastor of St. Hubert's in Chanhassen. Not only will we be talking about healing, but next week we're also going to be hearing uplifting words from Dr. Paul Ruff. And Dr. Ruff will offer words of hope and encouragement to help us fight off the winter blues, which we often face this time of year. That's next time on the Rediscover Hour.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com. Keyword, Rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.